Welcome, everyone. Today we have Tony Lee of LB America, sales manager, discussing mechanical room, commercial mechanical rooms. And away you go. And Tony has a couple people joining us today in his office. We'll all get trained at the same time.
All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for allowing us time to cover our products with all of you. On your screen, hopefully what you're seeing here is that a video shot of our production facility in Italy. So we figured this would be a very good start. The products that you see here are being painted and finished. Predominantly, these videos show that they are residential products. We did not, as also done here at the or in Italy's facility. So they are commercially rated. Let me go ahead and now bring up the bladder tanks. Certainly, our website is user-friendly for the most part. If you are looking for submittal data, additional information, specifications, this is the site where you can go, and it will certainly some necessary specifications, data, and as much as you need to know about tanks. Anything beyond here that's not covered, you're always welcome to contact us, and we certainly can take you across the finish line, if you will, as far as the remainder of the specifications or requirements are concerned. So let me talk a little bit about our facility here and warehouse. We are located in Houston, Texas. The warehouse is about approximately 42,000 square foot. The commercial ASME bladder tanks that are fabricated in Italy, once they are completed and they pass ASME certified inspection, they are loaded on a 40-foot container. That container will sail from Italy to either Houston or New York. New York is another location. Well, that's another port where we do have a distribution center in Pennsylvania to cover the northeast section as well. So we have two warehouses that we're working with. Houston is the largest at 42,000 square foot. Philadelphia has 20,000 square foot. And both warehouses are stocked with predominantly commercial products and also some residential products as well. But the day-to-day, everyday products that we see in and out and stock at both locations are air separators, which you see on the screen, and the ASME bladder tubes. These are predominantly products that you will see on most commercial HVAC projects. The air separators are produced domestically, so we do not rely on Italy for the air separator. Air separators that we stock start from 2-inch and go all the way up to 12-inch. Now, they are stocked with and without strainers, and we'll get into that shortly with the specification. But these are the tangential type air separators. These compete with predominantly all their major competitors out there, and these are for, let me see here, let me bring up the air separators. Probably want to use submittal, right? Literature here. Yeah, go to submittal data. So, as I stated at the top of the meeting, a lot of our product literature can be accessible or is accessible by these tabs up here. And so I'm going to go ahead and go into, I clicked on literature, drop down to submittal data sheet, and here are all of the products that we currently provide. Some stock, some custom, but predominantly they're all standardized products that you can find on here. So what we can do is go ahead and start with the air separators here, and you can download or you can click view. And this is a great site to point engineers and even contractors to for references or dimensions or information or that's quickly that they can access rather quickly. So at the top, I had mentioned that these are tangential air separators. So they're cut on a tangent, which means that the flow, once it comes in, it's going to circulate within the vessel and produce what we call a cyclone effect, and then go out the bottom flange. So this is a less strainer model, which means we don't have any internal strainers on this. Some contractors, or I should say some engineers, prefer that it be a less strainer. Some engineers want a strainer on their air separators. But as I say, these are stock. We stock these at 150 PSI up to 8 inch, and then beyond 8 inch and 10 inch, they are 125 PSI rated. So as you can see here, we do catalog anywhere from 2 inch all the way up to 10 inch. But as I said, we stock now with 12 inch with and without strainers. So most competitors will cut off their inventory at about 10. 8 to 10 is usually where they cut off. And a lot of them actually are cutting it off at 8 inch. Anything beyond that is a 4 to 6 week lead time. So we pride ourselves on having the larger air separators available to go in almost a moment's notice, if you will. So that this is the spec sheet that covers the tangential air separator. We put our skirt on ours so that we can store them to basically inventory them and warehouse them in a way where they can be stored standing up. So a majority of all these air separators are never installed on the floor. They're hung, and they're hung off of pipe and piping support. So sometimes we do have folks that go, hey, I got an air separator here. It's got a skirt, but it doesn't have, leave me enough clearance to do a drain on it off of the floor. I go, well, the skirt is not meant really for floor installation. Now, that doesn't mean that if there is a requirement for floor installation, we couldn't do a higher skirt or special skirt for that particular job. So let us know that going in. If generally the larger units, we've seen some jobs where they are installing it on the floor. So in those cases, let us know, and we certainly can make accommodations to put a higher skirt or a larger skirt on there, or even skirt with an angle clip or hold down, especially in California with seismic requirements. That is something that we can do for you. All right. So let me see if I can get us back. Can we go back, Makita, or I need to
scroll up? Oh, it opens it up. It's on tap.
Tony?
Yes. Tony?
Yeah, this is Brent Adams. Can you hear me?
Hi, Brent. Yes, I'm glad to hear you.
How are you? It's good to see you.
Likewise, if I can see you as well.
Yes. Now you can see my ugly face.
Okay.
I question on this port at the bottom with the skirt.
Yes, sir.
Isn't there enough room to put a nipple and then an elbow so that you can put your valve to the outside of the skirt?
You could on some of these, but not all of them. And again, we put the skirt on there barely to clear the air separator from the floor, if you will. That way the units are standing up. And, you know, you can imagine all these laying down. It's going to really occupy a lot of room and space. But depending on certain units, yes, you can do that. But I want to make sure that, you know, folks are aware that that skirt does not come on all the air separators with the proper clearance where you can put a drain and use that on the floor. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back to help. Okay. I'm learning how to, you know, keep up with technology here. So bear with me on this. So that covered the less strainer model, and I just want to bring up the
which strainer
is it down?
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Okay. That's the next thing we're going to have to do is get this a little bit better organized. Note to myself. Okay, guys. So this is the other type of air separator that we stock here in Pennsylvania. So now you can clearly see there. This is what we call it, our referring to the word here is the three piper. So this is the same thing, same idea, tangential separator. But what you have at the bottom here is we utilize a victaulic or a blind flange here on this side of the flange opposite. And so this is a means and ways for us to get in there, or the contractor, I should say, to get in there, open that up, and pull out a stainless steel screen, metal screen. And the object of that screen is basically to strain out any type of debris. So if you will, the water will circulate in and it'll make its way out this opposite bottom flange here. In that cavity, in this piping cavity, there is a stainless steel screen strainer, and that's removable. And that's removable by either the victaulic connection here or a blind flange once you get into the larger sizes. But hopefully everybody can see basically the outline here of a victaulic connection. So in the event that the engineer or the job calls for an air separator, that he wants a strainer in there, and provided that a contractor is revisiting the site after this thing gets hung up and installed a year later or 6 months or 12 months to climb up, remove the strainer, and flush it out, that option is available. But predominantly, as what we see day in, day out, products that are specified, especially air separators, if it's tangential and what I call old school, these are the two models that are predominantly being specified and found on most hydronic jobs. So again, 2-inch all the way up to 10-inch, and we stock up to 12-inch as well. And along with the air separators, we do provide a high capacity air vent that you can install, or the contractor can add and install at the very top of these air separators to help, burn the air, if you will, or relieve the air in the system as well. Any questions so far on the air separator? So beyond the 2-inch and the 12-inch, we do get custom requests to build these separators every which way under the sun. We've had customers require that these air separators with strainers be built in 304 stainless, 316 stainless steel. They may want a special sea spray paint on the exterior. They may want some additional nozzles. They want angle clips for bolting down purposes. They also may ask for support gussets that we can weld onto the air separator once they get into the larger sizes for the support off the ceiling. So we've done them all the way up to 36-inch pipe air separators. So we have the capabilities to build beyond what you see on the spec sheets. Okay. Anything else before we leave the air separators?
Can you touch on the air dirt separators?
Yeah, so let me close this down now. Yes. Okay, so let's spend a little bit on the air dirt. Let me go ahead and bring up the standard velocity units. Okay, so the other type of air separators and dirt separators that are now pretty common on specifications due to the work of Spirotherm over these many years is what we provide now, which is the air dirt separator. These are for basically the same purpose. You're removing air, but also there's media in here now to help basically compete with the likes of the Spirotherm. A couple years ago, Spirotherm had a real lock on the market. Certainly it had to do with their patent on these air dirt separators. That ran out and basically everybody and their mother jumped in on the game. So nowadays it's really common to see other folks out there besides the high-priced Spirotherm being specified with engineers. So these are not stock. We do build these to order. we can provide them from 2-inch all the way up to 36-inch and even larger if it's required. We have done and we are doing and providing quite a bit of air dirt separators now to the market, that some of them being standard velocity and then some of them at high velocity. We also are capable of putting removable heads on these units. So we can provide that as well. Spiratherm, Bell & Gossett, Thrust, even Wessels out there, they do, we all provide or offer models that have removable heads. So with that, basically, that's your accessibility into the tank to drop out a basket, a stainless steel pull ring basket inside to wash, flush, and clean. Now, again, I don't know how often contractors are sent out to a job 8 months or 2 years later to an air dirt separator that's hung 10, 12 feet in the air, and they're being asked to, hey, you know, remove that 34-inch or 36-inch heads, drop that out, and then lower the basket, and then have that flushed down. Haven't seen that, and something that gets done, but it's more of a rarity because, as you guys know, and contractors will know this, once this gets installed up there, predominantly a majority of these get insulated and wrapped up. So once that's being done and it's 10, 12 feet up in the air, out of sight, so to speak, and out of mind. But nevertheless, you know, if an engineer wants a Cadillac, we will try and give him a Cadillac. And so if I can talk about the media that we use, I think that's important. Spiratherm and some other folks are using copper wound, what I call stainless steel bottle washers, if you will, to extract and remove debris. We utilize a pull ring material. That is also something that Taco uses. And it's proven worth it in the industry, not only ours, but other industries over the years for being able to help remove air and also collect dirt. So inside of each unit, it will contain a stainless steel basket. And inside that basket consists of stainless steel pull rings that are about 1-inch in diameter and it's filled completely. So that's the media, if you will, that we use. And it's being accepted by a lot of engineers now across the country for us. And as I say, we're starting to do and provide a lot more of these now than we have in years past. Again, these can be built in any size configuration beyond the standard sheet here that's required. And so on a day-to-day basis, if you're up against Taco, Spiratherm, Wessels, if you will, some of them Bell & Gossett, where they're going after or they're calling out air dirt separators, we can meet that challenge. And we do have flow rate and pressure drop sheet on here as well for selection. And as I said, we can also assist if you get into situations where the engineer's looking for an air dirt, either standard or high velocity, and he doesn't know where to start, we certainly can assist. And I am more than glad to and have spoken to engineers directly on all of our RIPs or a lot of our RIPs' behalf. I'd be more than happy to assist there. So I can be an extended arm for you in terms of technical support. And then we'll just view the air height. Again, these are high velocity for higher GPM requirements as well. So we have those available. And there's, as I say, right now we have both of these units on multiple projects, large projects down in Miami for our rep down there. And they have been extremely pleased with our delivery, the quality, and the lead time. And the pricing, because once you compare ours up with a Spiratherm, you'll find that we have a great advantage when it comes to cost as well. All right, guys, I know I've been yapping here. Do you guys have any additional questions or anything on the air separators, either an air dirt separator before we leave the air side of the package?
There is a question that came up as to when would a standard velocity versus a high velocity, when how would one decide which way to go?
Yeah, so that's, it's not on us. Predominantly when a job is laid out, the engineer will call that out, John. But if not, then what we're going to do is certainly gather as much data as we can. And that comes in the form of flow in the gallons per minute and then the pressure drop that we're looking to attain. Obviously, we want this in the 2 to 3 range of PSI and nothing more. In most cases, but this is always and has always been driven by the specifying engineer on the job.
Okay.
But it is something now that it's in some ways taking over quite a bit of our supply now with the standard tangential air separator. Those are still out there. Those are still called for, but anything that's laid out new now, a lot of the engineers are going by this way. Either an air dirt standard or high velocity. As I said, we have been able to comply and meet that requirement for them and our reps throughout the U.S. So any typical hydronic system is going to consist of, I call it somewhat of a trinity, and that is an air separator and a bladder tank. So If there's no additional questions from anyone on the air separator, I'll go ahead and start talking about our ASME bladder tanks. Okay. So again, the spec sheets or the specification sheets are found here. We'll start with the hydronic heating bladder tank. So I want to see if I can blow this up because I am blind as a bat. Okay. So these are all of the sizes that we stock and out of our facility here in Houston and Pennsylvania. So it starts at 2 gallon in capacity and it goes all the way up to 1,320 gallons. I know most of our competitors out there do not stock anything beyond the 530. So we have 790, a 1,060, and a 1,320 at our disposal every day off the shelf. And that has been a tremendous asset for us here. But you know, it's not every day that you're gonna see a 790 or 1060 specified on a job, but it's good to know. Hopefully you guys know that we do have that available if that comes up. I would say the sweet spot for most jobs would start somewhere here in the 21 gallon and going up to about the 320 capacity. That's predominantly what we see specified within these ranges on an everyday basis. So let's talk about these tanks. As I said at the top, these are built and manufactured by our facility in Italy. They are 100% ASME certified. We build our tanks with 150 PSI as a standard. A majority of our competitors stock only 125 PSI. So we've been able to really gain an advantage on here with the engineers. And I think for the most part, if you can give them 150 over 125 PSI, they're gonna say, yeah, give me that. Especially at no extra charge or no extended delivery. So we go into it already kind of getting a leg up, if you will, on a majority of our bladder tank competitors. We also utilize a full volume bladder. So what does that mean? So when we say that our 2 gallon tank is 2 gallon capacity, it's 2 gallon capacity. If you were to fill that tank up with water, with no pre-charge, that tank is capable of holding 2 gallon capacity. The conflict sometimes that you and perhaps that we have run into over the years is competitors are also offering what we call a partial acceptance or a diaphragm ASME expansion tank. So what's the difference? The difference is, as I said, with ours, it's a full volume. So if you were to fill up a 2-gallon tank with a full volume bladder, that tank is capable of holding 2 gallons. With a partial acceptance, what they're utilizing is basically they're stretching a film of rubber across the middle midsection or the top third of the tank. And depending on how far that can stretch, which is not very much, their acceptance is much lower. And on those partial diaphragm ASME tanks, once they rupture, you're basically throwing away the entire tank. So on an ASME tank, up on the front end, we may be 5%, perhaps 7% higher than what a diaphragm tank costs. But what we want to take a look at and what we want to convey is the fact that, listen, if you want to shortchange yourself up front now, once that diaphragm tank fails, you're throwing the entire tank out and starting over. With ours, you have the ability, the customer, the contractor has the ability, if the bladder ever fails, that you can replace that bladder, keep the tank, and basically go on with that job. So to me, in some ways, I always kind of look at those partial diaphragm tanks as wasteful in a way as well. I mean, you're throwing an entirely good metal tank out because the diaphragm inside is gone. So that is a major consideration for us to talk about and to convey with the engineers. And most times when we tell them of that fact, they'll go, oh yeah, you know what? An ASME full volume bladder makes sense. Now, the other thing that's a plus is the fact that, as I say, with ours, it's a full acceptance, which means now we can take a smaller volume bladder tank in most applications and use a smaller tank versus a larger diaphragm tank. Does that make sense? So for instance, I'll just pull a number. On a job, if the engineer is calling out a 21-gallon partial acceptance tank, you can go and use our 12-gallon tank in some cases, depending on what the conditions or what the system condition is. So that's a good, that's probably a good segue for me now to take you into, hopefully it's up here. Up here under, back at the front of the page, you'll see a bladder tank sizing program. So I'll do that slow so everybody can catch it here. So this is a calculator, it's an Excel format that you can share with the contractor, you can share with the engineer, and you can utilize yourself as well. Hopefully it comes up. Okay, there we go. So this program will help you size a hydronic bladder tank or a domestic expansion tank bladder as well. So this is purely for expansion. All right, so let me walk you guys through this, and let me again try to see if I can magnify this somewhere. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Okay, guys, so this is an interactive sizing table. Again, there's nothing on here that's proprietary. You're more than welcome to share it with engineers. In fact, we have done calculations here for our customers, our rep, or even an engineer, and sent it to them for use for that particular job and then for future use as well.
Tony, okay. We're not seeing the spreadsheet.
Wow.
For some reason.
Let me... It's
there we go.
Shown on ours. Can you see it now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, my fault. I must have clicked something. Okay, here are what we call conditions that are really required for us to properly size an expansion tank. As again, this table will work for hydronic application or domestic expansion application as well. At the end of the day, whether it's hydronic or domestic, it still comes down to expansion in a system. Okay. So what's important? What's very important is if an engineer comes in and he has no clue where to start as far as what size tank is required, we gotta have a few knowns. Even if we have to guess or an educated guess at it, we gotta have the system volume of the system. And so how is that determined? Well, that determines on the piping, the length of pipe, the size of pipe. And if he's an engineer who's laying out a job, he's gotta have certainly a very good idea of the system volume that they're gonna be working with, or that building's gonna be working with. So let me leave the system volume at 900 for this chart. And you can change it to whatever that system volume. And you know, okay. All right. So can you still see the chart?
Yes.
Okay. So you can leave it at 900, which we do, or if the system volume is more than that, we can change it to, so I'm just going to change it on this to 1,000. So if we're dealing with a typical hydronic heating system, you're probably talking about initial temperature or ambient temperature. If we're talking about San Francisco, what are we talking about in a building? 40 degrees, 50?
No, I'd say 60 is good.
60 is good, right. So, but that's interchangeable as well. Okay, so in a hydronic system, this again, what's the max that that system will see? I'm going to leave 160 unless you have something else, John.
That's fine.
Okay, so hydronic is 160, but if it's domestic, we're probably going to cut off at about 140 in most cases, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, so now with this factor, you're talking about between 60 and 160 with 1,000 gallons in the system, the expansion factor is 0.02 and change. And how that is derived is you can follow this formula here, and that's where it's derived from. It's Boyle's law. So this is the same for Amtrol, this is the same for TACO, and it's the same for LB. So again, nothing unique here. So once you put in these two factors, it will automatically give you the sizing, or I should say the expansion factor. Now we're almost there. In fact, we're more than mostly there. So given these conditions at 1,000 gallons in the system and the temperature now going from 60 to 160, basically we're heating that 1,000 gallons of water up. And when we heat that from 60 to 160, what's derived is here's your amount of expanded water. It's 20 gallons. We'll round it off, call it 21 gallons. That's the amount of expansion that that system will see. So next, we want to concentrate now on the minimum and maximum working pressure. And over the years, most of what I see on a hydronic heating system is 15 and 30 PSI. But this could vary, and this could change based on what that particular system will call for. But you can see now where the engineer, if he's kind of walking blind, this now at least gives him a map, a footprint, a guide to kind of start punching in some known conditions. And so, okay, so we determined that the working pressure in this system, particularly for this day, for this project, is going to be 15 PSI minimum and 30 max. So now here's what you got. That's the acceptance factor. And the acceptance factor, again, is derived from these two numbers. And you'll find that down here. That's the table for minimum and maximum. And so what this tells us is between 15 and 30, we got an acceptance factor of a 0.336. So this automatically calculates out the size tank, the total volume tank you will need, or we will need. So in this case here, you're looking at a 61-gallon tank. So knowing that, I'm going to drop this, minimize this, and I'm going to go back to, if I can find, maybe it's here. I'm looking for our bladder tank. So let me go back. Oh, here we go. All right. So that table told us that we needed a 61-gallon tank. So what we do is we run down our chart here, and the nearest size that we have to 61 gallon is 57 gallon or an 80 gallon. So 4 gallon of expansion volume separates us basically from using a 57 gallon tank. I will tell you based on experience that you can always, that 57 gallon tank most likely will suit the purpose. Now, if the engineer doesn't like that and he may be thinking about possibly down the line where the system could be expanded, then you're going to go ahead and jump right up to the 80 gallon here, 80 gallon capacity tank. So that's what you can do with a full volume bladder tank, is that 2 or 3 gallons in the system, the differential at times will not make that big a difference. And if we're trying to squeeze and we're comfortable as far as using the 57 gallon tank is concerned, then I would recommend that's what we would use.
Tony, I've been using the acceptance value to making my selection versus the tank volume.
The trick with the acceptance volume is this, and that's always something that gets people confused a lot too, and I get it. Within the industry, people have a tendency, or competitors, or us even, we have a tendency, Antrel, let me use Antrel for example. They will go ahead and print the acceptance volume on that spec sheet. But what does not get called out on that is what factor, what are you using to come up with that acceptance factor? Again, remember how this, let's go back to this, because this is where it's all at. So we've already said, look, the acceptance factor on this particular job is 0.336. But the minute that these conditions change up here, and let's say it's a chill water application, we're just going from 60 to 120. Now you can see where, look how much that dropped off. Remember, we were looking at a 61 gallon tank requirement. Now with a 900, or I can even put back the 1,000 gallons here. Is that 1,000? Yes. And you can see between 60, did we change that? Yeah, just that differential in the temperature changes everything as far as the tank volume is concerned. So now this is still acceptance. Now, so what I'm trying to get at is Amtrol does not say, okay, the acceptance of this tank is 20 gallons, but it doesn't say, hey, is that a chill water application? What are the system volume? What are the system temperature? And then what's the working pressure? So you see what I'm saying? I mean, if nothing else, and you're trying to match an acceptance equal to equal, you can always take our full volume tank, take the volume, and times that by 90, 0.9. And so we say our full volume bladder tanks are capable of 90% of acceptance. Make sense? And really, you know, on multiple jobs now, if it's 2 tanks, most people probably won't care. But if you're talking a large project where there's multiple tanks involved, you're talking about you know, $80 or $130 difference between an ASME full volume tank and a diaphragm throwaway tank, well, then this is where the rubber meets the road. If we have these conditions, we can probably end up saving the customer or the engineer or the client some money by going to a smaller full volume bladder tank. So everyone okay with this sizing procedure?
Okay.
And again, share this. In fact, pass it out and just give it away. Because the more engineers and the more customers are aware of this sizing table, it's going to be a real benefit to them and us as well. All right. So I'm just going to go ahead and do one more system off of here.
Tony,
not all.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
I have a question. This is Brad. Yeah. I've been exposed to diaphragm and bladder tanks for years and years, and I do appreciate the advantages of the bladder design. However, of course, if we've had over the years a few ruptures of the bladders, and they're difficult to change. The nice thing about it is you can change the bladders, they're just difficult. If you ever had a someone trying to extract a ruptured bladder out of a tank and have it rip off and remain inside the tank, what can be done to get that partial bladder out? Or do you have to just throw away the tank and get a new expansion tank?
Yeah, so let me, that's a great question, and let me walk that through. So doing this for 35 years, I've had the pleasure, or really the non-pleasure, of going out to certain jobs and helping the contract tractor or the rep extract failed bladders. So I just will not sell you on the fact that they're all easy. You're absolutely right. The larger they get, the more cumbersome they get. So, you know, there's a big difference between replacing a bladder that's 21 gallon versus a 317 gallon bladder. There's no doubt about it, and it takes work. So that certainly should not be short sold. But once you get into the larger ASME tanks as well, if you're throwing away a complete ASME tank versus just replacing it with a bladder, again, the dollar and cents there's a big, gap. So that being said, if the contractor has the necessary room to be able to lay the tank down, that, and I'm just going to focus on the larger tanks now, talking about 211 gallon and up, for example. If they have the ability to, or the room to lay that down, that certainly will make the job extremely a lot easier. If not, in most cases, contractors are using come along or some form of a winch up at the top where they can basically wrap a chain. We've wrapped a chain or a rope around the bladder and pull that out. In fact, some of them will also cut it depending on how far we get with it. So depending on what they're able to pull out and where it stops, you can cut it and rip that out and then basically pull the remainder out. But it will take work, Brent. And it starts with draining the tank down. And the larger the tank, the more difficult it is. So knock on wood, we have not had nearly the amount of failure that I've seen working with other manufacturers over the years on the larger units. But it's not a picnic. And so it takes some work. We do have plenty of instructions available to assist the contractor or the end user in removing and extrapolating those bladders. And we've also jumped on the phone to help them and assist them as well. So again, we are fully available here. And if they need help with some guidance and how to remove and extract the bladder, we're more than happy to help. But yes, it's not easy, Brent.
Tony, can you touch?
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you, Tony. Can you touch on the other components that surround, say, a circling pump
Sure. Let me go ahead and close this down. Make sure I close it properly here. Let's just do that. Don't want to end up as cutting you guys off. We can close that. That as well. Okay, let me go back to here. Yeah. Okay. So besides the air separators and bladder tanks, we also provide triple duty valves and suction guides. So if I can bring that up. We talked about the high capacity air vents earlier. If and anytime you're selling an air separator and a bladder tank on a job, it should be a simple sell to also add a couple of high capacity air vents to it. You can use that on the air separators, and then you can also use that on the line with the bladder tanks as well. So it's a great accessory to help remove air from and trapped air from the system. All right, so the other type of products that we stock here at our facility is the triple duty valves and the suction guides. Again, let me bring up the spec sheets. We stock up to 10 inch here on the triple duty valves. And we do have, we don't want to do that. These are cast iron. We do bring these in from offshore. Let me go to the cut sheet and right to the middle. Okay, so most of you are familiar with triple duty valves, I assume.
Don't assume.
Go ahead, John.
Don't assume.
I know. Don't assume. Okay. All right, so these are triple duty valves again with any type of hydronic packages along with pumps. Engineers and jobs are calling for triple duty valves. So it's triple duty valves for its name for a reason, and it's utilized for certainly shut off, a backflow preventer, and then also a balancing valve within the triple duty valve's capabilities. So that's why we call it a triple duty valve. But anyway, these are cast iron, and we stock these here at the facility from 2-inch right now up to 10-inch. And we have capabilities to provide you with 12, 14, and 16 if required. But predominantly, most jobs, you're going to see 10 inches and down. These are cast iron. And as I say, they're available every day here from our two warehouse locations.
Yeah, triple duty valves are normally on the pressure side of a circulator.
Right.
And not too often these days with variable speed pumps, but sometimes they specify, even though I believe that's not an appropriate use of them.
Correct. So then we also have somewhere here. Did I miss it? Touching guides. Oh, here we are. And again, these are cast iron valves as well. This is our answer to the suction guides out there. And again, as John said, what we talked about on predominantly the majority of hydronic specifications and jobs, air separators, bladder tanks, suction guides, and triple duty valves are certainly the norm. They're specified on predominantly all the jobs. And here we do stock it again at our warehouse here. Our inventory is quite vast. We stock two by 1.25 all the way up to right now a 12 by 10 12x12 actually. That's ready to go. And again, predominantly most jobs, you're going to see it in the 10-8, 6x6, 6x4, 6x4x3 is generally the popular sizes. We have the capabilities to custom build and custom fabricate suction guides that are larger as far as beyond the sheets here. So we've done 20x20, 14x20, and a lot of oddball. That can be done in carbon steel or stainless steel as well. And we have the capabilities to provide that to you as well. Lead time on those is running about 4 to 5 weeks once we get order placement. And as far as the rest of the products here, the standard, once we receive the order, it's out of our warehouse within a week. So these are also available to you guys if you're picking up on a commercial job where they're calling for items well beyond the air separator and glider tanks.
The purpose of the suction diffuser is to allow for, and usually you have to have straight pipe entering the suction end of the pump, and this allows for there to be an elbow on the suction and the pump without having to have all that extra length that makes that crams up a mechanical room.
Exactly. It also serves, it stands in for a strainer. At the end of the suction guides here, you can open that the door here and remove and clean the strainer. So that also helps reduce a strainer on the job as well. So it's all built in here as well. So at the end of the day, you're reducing the amount of accessories and piping in a typical mechanical room. And I think if you talk to most contractors, that's always a good thing, or well, at least most of the time, it's a good thing.
Thank
so
you.
These are provided with what we call a startup screen, which is a finer mesh. Once the startup is done and completed, the contractor can open the door up, remove the strainer, and throw away the startup screen, and then work with the existing mesh stainless steel screen that's permanently in the unit. Okay. So that runs us up pretty much on certainly some of LB's capabilities. I think you'll see that if you have an opportunity, I would certainly encourage you guys to go through our website here. There are abundance of other products that we provide, and I'm sure we can't cover it all in an hour. Something I will mention before we leave is we do quite a bit of booster tanks, ASME booster tanks. We stock them here for booster applications for domestic boosters in 200 PSI ranges. So we stock 120s, 132 gallons, and then 185 gallon. These are very popular models. We go up with these models, we go up against the likes of Wessels and Synchro Flow and Tiger Flow and all kinds of other flows. But, you know, we do stock these and we do very well with them. So if you get into an application where you have requirements for booster, domestic full volume bladder booster tanks, we have them available, certainly at 200 PSI as well. And then what I'll try and do here, John, is kind of wrap it up a little bit in summary. We have capabilities to certainly provide customized products now. So we can do anything from a 2 gallon tin can up to a large tank that can be set on a flatbed. So if you run into any type of tank application, give us a shot. Whether it's 2 gallons, whether it's 3,000 gallons, whether it's line, unlined, stainless steel, just prime only, give us a shout. We are more than glad to provide you with the necessary quote. We've done that over the years with you, John, on various projects. Custom tank side of our business is something that has been very strong for us as well. A lot of times we're able to turn quotes within a 24, 48 hour period. And then if it should move ahead, tanks, depending on what the makeup is and what's required, fabrication and a lead time usually is running around 6 to 8 weeks. Anything longer than that, we certainly will share that with you guys. But by all means, you know, don't let just the pages here and the items here kind of lull you into the fact that we can't do, we can't be of other service to you. At the end of the day, we want to be in a position where if you call us and you need something, if we can provide it, we'll do so. And if we can't do it, we'll tell you right away and certainly let you get on your way or certainly guide you towards somebody that may be able to help. So we don't want to stand in your way, but we want to be a part of your process as far as being able to take and secure more tank orders, whatever that configuration may be. John, I think you have your sound on mute here. Let me see.
Yes, thank you, Tony.
Okay. So hopefully that wraps it up. I know, you know, we didn't get a chance to cover everything, but I think hopefully that gives you a pretty good foundation of what we have available and how we can service you guys continually. And we've had a good long relationship here, and we want to continue that process.
All right. I'm going to end recording here.